Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson standing in for Chuck Price. Chuck is away on, I think, family business this week. And in the studio today with me is Kevin Stege, who's taken a, I guess it's a break from all of the tax work.
Come to have some fun on the radio this morning.
Well, very good.
Yes.
And we know that you are at your peak of mental capacity today.
That's
so we will make sure that our questions are technical and difficult.
That sounds good. I'm firing on all one cylinder.
Okay, very good.
Yes.
Well, this is a show that invites our listeners to call and ask us questions or talk about any kind of topics you want to talk about. One of the things that we do is we like to talk to you about your questions, and we can't do that unless you call us. So I'm going to remind you of the numbers, and we very much enjoy that because we think that if you're interested in a subject, that is likely that other listeners are interested as well. Otherwise, we have to kind of pick some topics that we hope you're going to be interested in, but we can't be sure. So call us at 503-417-7626 if you're in the local area. And if you're out of the local area, 1-800-990-0750, and you can join the conversation. We talk about investing, although less so when just Kevin and I are here. We talk about taxes, and that's foremost on Kevin's mind right now. And then also about legal matters, estate planning, elder law, all sorts of things, even other things if you want, but those are the areas that we usually talk about. And if we can't answer your question, we will make sure that we find out the answer and call you back or have you on the show the next time. So it's a painless radio. There's no question that we find unusual or unpleasant. Well, we don't know about that yet, but hopefully not. But anyway, and so enjoy your cup of coffee. Give us a call. I would caution that it is a little easier to call early. Because if you wait till about 5 minutes before the hour, then we can't catch up with you. And we oftentimes leave you hanging, and I don't really want to do that. So start writing down your ideas for questions, or just if you want to join the conversation, just tell us what kind of subjects you'd like to hear about or information you'd like to have, and we'd be glad to oblige as much as we can. Today, we've got kind of a hodgepodge or potpourri show. Kevin's got a lot of tax information. I'm sure that during his tax season, he's been listening to his clients and has heard all sorts of stories and has tips and interesting things to bring up for people who may not know, you know, about certain kinds of issues that come up in tax returns or and I'm sure that he's going to admonish everyone to, if you haven't gotten all your materials to your CPA, you're running late here. So it's hard for them to, you know, do the last minute rush. So we're going to talk about, as far as I'm concerned, one of the questions I get all the time is, I don't really want my money to go to the state of Oregon and when they pass away. And so one of my topics, and I think I'm going to reserve this for Carl's comment, is when the state of Oregon gets your money. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, and it should be an interesting topic because I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I was telling him about the topic and about just this sort of basic information that I got, and he was quite surprised. He didn't realize the extent or nature of the when does the state get your money and what do they do with it. So it's kind of an interesting topic, so we'll get to that a little later. We're going to talk about some financial things for seniors, and those of us who are rapidly becoming seniors. Some financial issues for older adults and tools that help older adults and not necessarily just older adults, but talking about the kind of the pros and cons of some of these techniques and things. Then we're going to have a little section about talking about protecting your finances, ID thefts, fraud, scams, and financial elder abuse, and some minor tips to help you avoid that sort of thing. And then, of course, we're going to talk about a number of subjects with Kevin about taxes. So what's your big theme today, Kevin?
Well, we are going to, you touched on scams. I am going to talk about a scam that we actually, Baker and Colson, ran into personally just this week. And it is one of the top five scams that the IRS publishes that it's been going on for a bit. But we had a firsthand account of that, which in hindsight, could have been. If you know it's a scam, you can have a little bit of fun with it. But that's maybe not the best thing to do right out of the gate.
It's kind of a bad thing when you or you know a bad move to call the CPA with an IRS scam.
that was kind of the irony in the whole thing.
Honestly, there are occasional scams that come to the lawyers' offices too. There are some scams that had to do with certified checks. Just because it's a certified check doesn't necessarily mean it's real. We've seen them, and where they look absolutely, perfect. You call the bank, the bank says, "No, we didn't issue that check." That's kind of amazing. So, a lot of times those fake certified checks come from some bank you've never heard of. So,
yeah, very true. Well, definitely give us a call, 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. And, I guess with Chuck on, we can still give a stock report, and that's going to be buy low, sell high.
That's
the extent of it.
We're not going to make any promises for rates of return or tell you which stock to pick or even what bracket to pick in the the basketball tournament.
That's right. Unless you're selling short, then maybe you don't want to buy low and sell high.
I know that the only advice I would give is the one that Chuck gives every week, which is, if you don't have a defensive strategy for some of your important money, you better.
Yes.
And so that's about it. So we're going to talk about all of those things, or even better, anything that you'd like to talk about. It's very important to us if you'll call us and join the conversation. We enjoy that very much. And this is a local show, by the way. We are located right here in downtown Portland, Oregon. Both Kevin and I and Chuck have been local business people for many years, and we really, really enjoy being part of the community. And this is a somewhat unique show because it is a call-in show, and we're actually here. We're not, someplace in Florida. So, although we might be there if we could, but
that's right.
Anyway, so Kevin, if somebody wanted to get hold of you when you were off the air,
yes,
how would they do that?
Yes, and I definitely encourage you. You've been working on your own tax return, or you've gotten your taxes back, and you've got a question about something on there, or something doesn't seem right. Maybe your tax situation seems the same year after year, but maybe you owed a little more, and you just want to chat about that, and stuff, definitely give us a call here on the air or call me at my office. I'm at 503-666-5569. And that's out the east side of Gresham there. The tax due date is coming up, and if you haven't got your tax returns filed, you definitely want to at least consider taking a look at your tax situation to make a payment with your extension. You don't want to ignore the possibility that you might have a balance due, if you're going to go on extension, because, as we've said before, an extension is only an extension of time to file, not an extension of time to pay. And, one thing that I've run into with this situation is in, you know, if a person is on an installment agreement with the IRS or with Oregon and they're paying back taxes and they've come to an agreement, they've maybe gone online and filled it out themselves and they're making, you know, X amount of dollar payment per month. If you don't stay current with your taxes, that installment agreement typically is invalidated, and collections is back on the table.
Oh well, and do those monthly installment kinds of plans, does that apply to whatever's owing on the newest tax return, or does it continue on?
No, it doesn't. That's what I'm saying is it only takes care of the past years, and you have to, as part of your agreement with those installment agreements, is you agree to keep current with all of your filings and all of your liabilities as they come due. And I don't know off the top of my head if you just drop it on extension and you end up owing, say, you know, in August when you file, you're technically late payment, and that I believe can invalidate your installment agreement. So you definitely want to make sure you're paid up if you have an installment agreement with the taxing authorities.
Well, you know, that's a kind of a common problem with payment plans generally, is that a lot of times the currency of the payments, you know, you're going to make an extra payment over and above that, and generally speaking, that doesn't excuse you from any further payments. If you pay three payments ahead, usually that means that's nice. You've reduced the balance due, but you still owe next month's payment.
That's right.
So unless you've made some kind of arrangements with the company that you're paying to, so anyway, and at Baker & Coulson, I know that they know you, but how many folks do you have out there doing taxes and all and the business work that you do?
Yeah, we've got, I believe we've got 8 CPAs on staff. We're kind of, we're a large local firm. We're in the Portland Business Journal. We're ranked somewhere around 24, 25 size-wise in the Portland area. We're the largest firm east of the Willamette River. Been there for 40-plus years. The original partners are still roaming the halls, causing trouble, and we cover a wide variety of services. Just about any accounting service that you need, we'll provide. We don't do audits. We limit ourselves to we do fairly significant financial statements called reviewed financial statements, which is a step below an audit. But we have decided not to do that. But forensic accounting, court. Expert testimony. We really focus on small business finances and tax preparation and financial management consulting. You know, we offer the satellite services, payroll, bookkeeping, that type of thing. But we really specialize in the small business and the related owner's personal tax situation. Our ideal client would be a high net worth small business owner.
You know, it's interesting because since we've been working together and have gotten to know your firm, our firm has a lot of similarities. We have 9 lawyers. That's the Warren Allen firm. And one of our namesakes and founders is still around still, as you say, wandering the halls, causing trouble. We have, like I said, 9 lawyers and an approximately the same number of staff. We've been in the same location since early 1970s. Very broad practice. We have, you might call us a general practice, but virtually everybody in our firm is also a litigator. They say that in the Marine Corps, maybe that's why my senior partner is a retired Marine colonel. And in the Marine Corps, everybody starts out as an infantryman. So I kind of figure at our place, we always start out as a litigator. And so everybody has trial experience, which is useful for people who have transactional work as well, because they see what happens when the transaction didn't get put together quite right. So it's a good thing to have that experience. My area tends to be estate planning and probate, but we have lawyers who do nothing but family law and divorce and custody and adoptions and things like that. We represent a lot of landlords. We have a department that has a lot of landlord institutional landlords and individual landlords as well. And if you are a landlord, you know that that law is very technical, very fast moving, and can be very frustrating for landlords. So you often need some help, and you need it now, and you need it, you know, well. So that's that. And then we have a personal injury and medical malpractice. We even do a little bankruptcy now and then. We do a lot of real estate work. We do a lot of corporate work. And so we do just about everything. We don't do criminal law. Although, ironically, most all of us have done some criminal law in the past. So it's not like we're totally unfamiliar with it, but we wouldn't do it anymore, just simply because if you're going to be doing criminal law, you really need to do mostly criminal law. Otherwise, it's just it just doesn't work very well with whatever else you're doing. So that's kind of what we do, and we're at on 850 Northeast 122nd, which is, you know, just right around the corner for most of us. So for now, now that you know kind of the subject areas that we deal with and our topics that we're going to talk about, we're going to take a little break, and we'll come back, and Kevin's going to talk to you a little bit about some tax issues.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified here on a typical spring Saturday morning in downtown Portland, Oregon. You know, on the commercial break there, I heard that Chuck says that he's got a, you know, come in for a consultation, and we can, you know, especially Social Security planning, there's this file and suspend strategy that's available. Well, maybe our listeners or maybe yourself also, Carl, has seen in the news that the Obama administration is got that strategy in their crosshairs and potentially.
Well, for those of us who are rapidly approaching the time, maybe you should explain what the file and suspend strategy is.
Yes, exactly. So what it is it's a strategy to be able to collect more Social Security benefits. Now, of course, nobody has a crystal ball. So to say that this, you know, you don't know how long you're going to live. And that's the key factor in all of this. And so in the file and suspend strategy, you are delaying Social Security benefits. So at some point, somebody's going to die before they recoup the extra benefits in doing this strategy. But it's where you have a married couple and where the typically the higher earning beneficiary files for benefits at full retirement age and then immediately suspends those benefits. And at that point, the lower earning spouse can collect based on the higher earning spouse's calculations, and it's a percentage of it. It's not just dollar for dollar. It's you know, fairly complicated. And then the higher earning spouse can continue to defer their benefit until they reach maybe age 70, where they would be getting quite a bit larger Social Security benefit. And then once they start filing for benefits, or the other spouse reaches their full retirement age, the other spouse gets the larger of the two. And, you know, it's available really to anybody except for single beneficiaries of Social Security. And, you know, it's been around forever. It's been in the law forever. And this is just another thing that you know, it's the way the government's going, and it's who we put into office, if this is the way you want things to go, it's going to hit everybody.
You know, it's interesting how there's a real tension between, you know, no politician wants to raise taxes, but, you know, the reality is that a lot of times they have to get more money, and it's really, you know, they really, really are creative about looking at the ways that they can have the effect of raising taxes, but do it without calling it a tax raise.
Exactly right. Well, so. Yes, they do need to. They think they need to raise more money, and of course, some of us think they need to cut spending. But that's a different topic for a different day. So, all this to say, the file and suspend strategy is in the crosshairs of the Obama administration to eliminate that because they feel it benefits high income folks to a greater extent. But fortunately, it would take congressional action for this to go through. So, anyway, something to keep your eye on if you're approaching retirement age, or if that's something that you're considering in the future. As I said last week, the eagle screams again.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, folks, if you're interested in any tax topic or a Social Security topic or a legal topic, again, our telephone number's here, 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. We entreat you and implore you and exhort you to call us, because it would be fun for you and fun for us. So, Kevin, what else you got on the plate for the tax guy?
Well, you know, something I came across this week, an interesting question. Had a beneficiary of an IRA, the original IRA owner passed away, and the beneficiary received their share. It's called a stretch IRA or an inherited IRA. And this amount was in the IRA, and based on the rules at the time, they have to take that IRA out in over their life expectancy, the new IRA owner's life expectancy. Well, they decided they wanted the rest of the money that was in the account to take it out of a lump sum. So they liquidated it. Their 1099 came to them. This isn't a client of mine, so I'm just talking generally. The 1099-R came to them, and it was coded under code 1, subject to the 10% penalty. Does that seem right to you?
And how old was the secondary, the person who inherited the IRA?
Good question. We'll say 30. Under 59 and a half.
Well, I guess I can understand the rationale for it, but it doesn't seem quite right. But
especially because you're being forced to take required minimum distributions. So if you take more than the minimum, you're subject to the 10% penalty. No, so this is where you need somebody who you don't just rely on your software to take the code. Otherwise, you're going to be paying 10% penalty if you just rely on your software. You need somebody who says no. You go back to the broker and you tell them, you messed up. This isn't subject to the 10% penalty. I need a new 1099-R. You need to send a corrected one to the IRS, and you need to clean that up. Interestingly, the story behind the story is the broker for the last 9 years never notified the new beneficiary that they were required to take out distributions, and no distributions had been taken out in the prior 9 years. And as you know, that is subject to penalty, and it's stiff. And fortunately, the preparer in that case was able to take it out immediately, assess, it was basically a $20,000 penalty, and then write a get out of jail free card penalty letter, and fortunately the IRS relied on the fact that they received bad advice. And in fact, it is a required notice from the broker to let people know that. And so the client was not happy with the broker and pulled all of the money away from the broker. And frankly, I think the 1099-R in error probably wasn't in error. I think it was more of a get you back type of filing, and that does happen.
Oh, I mean, before the 1099 went out, the beneficiary pulled the money out.
Exactly.
Ooh.
And the broker did not like having the account taken from him. So you got to be careful who you're dealing with, and you got to make sure that you know what your rights are and you know what is right and what's wrong. So,
well, especially in the area of IRAs and things like that, they are extremely complicated in terms of their distribution and the times and the amounts and the penalties and who can stretch what. And it's a very difficult thing. And it's one of those things that does come up in the estate planning area as well. A lot of times you have people who generally, I tend to try to advise people or suggest to people that where it makes sense is to use individual beneficiaries, so that if it goes to your spouse and then you'd want it to go to your children or whoever else after that, as opposed to going to like a trust. You can do it through a trust, and it can be stretched out to a certain extent. But when you do that, it just makes it a little bit more complex, and there tends to be just a little bit more flexibility with the individuals.
That's exactly right. Getting proper beneficiary designations on your IRA is really key in your estate planning. If your IRA just goes to your estate or trust, there are less options available for how that can be spread out. Mm-hmm. In this case, fortunately, it was properly, the IRA was originally properly transferred to the recipient beneficiary, and it was titled exactly as it should have been. Mm-hmm. And so it showed that it was an inherited IRA and was.
So going back to the kind of the rules that apply in that situation, so you've got a young beneficiary who receives an inherited IRA, and let's suppose that they chose at that point, and it would ordinarily be stretched out over their lifetime, I think. But they also at that point could take the whole thing out, but if they wanted to, and would that be subject to the 10% penalty? That way it wouldn't, because it wasn't their income.
As a rule of thumb, any IRA that is subject to required distributions is not going to be subject to the 10% penalty.
Okay, and the required distributions were because the owner of the IRA was over 59 and a half. Over 70 and a half.
No. The original owner, it doesn't matter what his age is. Well, it does matter, but not for this case that we're talking about.
Okay.
But it's just because it was inherited. And once you inherit an IRA, the IRS says you've got to start taking minimum distributions.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
What, regardless of your age. So.
Exactly right.
It's
yeah.
not related to the age of anybody at this point. It's just you inherited it, you got to start taking RMDs.
That's right. And it should be the 1099 should come under a Code 4 death benefit, which is not subject to the 10%. Of course, subject to income taxes, though.
Of course. Yes. I mean, that's a given.
Yes, exactly right. So, change of topic. One of the scams that is out there, and it's a well organized scam, and it's very convincing. It's a telephone scam where you get a call from somebody from the IRS quite frequently. If you have caller ID, it will indicate it's from the IRS. They're able to manipulate that system somehow and have their caller ID come up indicating their IRS. They even can give you a number to call back that you call them back, and it's a different person and seems very official, very convincing, but that's not how the IRS works. And particularly this phone call where they call and indicate that in X number of hours, authorities will be showing up to arrest you because of a problem with your account with the IRS.
Whoa, and the sky is falling too.
Exactly.
Wow.
And if they have an Indian accent or a Far Eastern accent or something along those lines, that's not to say that they don't work with the IRS, but that's typically where these scams are coming from, is out of country. They're fairly articulate too. They have a number of people working in their office, and they'll transfer you around from phone to phone to phone, and I'm sure you're hopping around some room in a different country.
Wow, what a complex scam. But it sounds, for those of you who are, seniors out there, you have to be very, very careful, and that's one of the things we'll talk about a little later, but you have to be very careful because anytime you have people that call you on the phone that want something from you, or are, and certainly if they're threatening you, that is, you just hang up. Never even listen to that stuff. If they're really serious, and if any, you know, for example, if the IRS is planning to do something to you, you're going to have received multiple letters way in advance of that.
Multiple different types of letters over the course of a year or so, you know, depending on the nature and how much, you know, they may be more interested in a $100,000 collection than a $5,000 collection. But all said, you will have received multiple notices, and they will be increasing in their description of what's going on, that you're now in collections, that they intend to seize, so on and so forth.
Yeah, you better get in touch with us pretty quick so that you can make arrangements to do something about it. We don't really want to do this, but we will.
Yeah,
they give a lot of notice procedures before they actually get to the point of, you know, taking serious, collection type agencies and going to jail is like that, you know, unless you're Al Capone, it isn't going to happen. So,
That's exactly right. You know, one of our partner's daughters was contacted with this. And so, of course, her dad does her taxes, I'm assuming. And so she's like, going to jail in the next 30 minutes for her tax return. And, you know, so she calls up her dad, and it's like, Dad, did you mess up on my taxes?
So, he'll never live it down.
Exactly. Anyway, that's just something to be aware of. And, you know, Carl, you brought up a good point. What frustrates you in all this is, for the most part, you know, on a good day, we can pretty well pick that out. But, you know, it's the seniors, the elderly, maybe, somebody who's, not fully there with their mental capacities and stuff. And if they, you know, these scammers take no pity on who they can try to steal from. So it's a unfortunate thing. And you know, my partner called the authorities to talk about it, and they pretty well said, well, it's, you know, if it's out of country, there's nothing we can do. So,
well, you know, and that's the sad thing. I mean, that's a lot of the internet stuff too. The internet scams and things like that come from overseas as well a lot of times. And you know, what are you going to do if they're in, you know, like you said, if they're in some place unknown in India or whatever, you know, and Nigeria seems to be a popular place for those kinds of scams. But I think we'll take a little break and come back with Carl's comments, and we're going to talk about, when does the state of Oregon get your money?
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Colson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Colson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepsen. It's time for Carl's comments. You can also reach us here at 800-990-0750. Well, the topic today is, when does the state of Oregon get your money? And what I'm talking about here is when you have an estate And, you know, a lot of times people are concerned about when is my money, you know, I don't want to let the state of Oregon get my money. Well, that really is pretty rare in an estate. And that happens in an estate when there are simply no heirs. There's no will, and they just can't find any relatives. There are no relatives that fit within the legal definition of an heir. And then it has a process that they call escheat, E-S-C-H-E-A-T. And sounds kind of right, doesn't it? Anyway, it basically escheats to the state of Oregon. And it then goes to the Department of State Lands. And the Department of State Lands also gets a whole bunch more money. The Department of State Lands gets money for unclaimed property, unclaimed checks, unclaimed refunds, unclaimed overpayments, unclaimed money orders, unclaimed bank accounts, and unclaimed mutual fund and stock accounts. And so they get all of this money, and they send it to the Department of State Lands. Department of State Lands holds it in trust forever. But it's subject to the claims of the people who own it. And then they invest the earnings on the money. And the earnings that they get, not the principal, but the earnings that they get on the money that is unclaimed and escheated, if you will, goes to the Oregon K through 12, the 197 K through 12 public school districts. And you may say, well, how much could that be? Well, currently the DSL holds something in the neighborhood of $400 million. And they have, and that's with 2.3 million owners. And in 2010, they paid $50.5 million to the school districts. That's a, you know, that's quite a big deal. So, but there is a process for claiming your money. And one of the things we often do in an estate is we just run a check on the decedent to find out if there was any money that was left behind. It's not at all uncommon that people, you know, move around and they have a bank account and they forget to close it, and then they don't leave a forwarding address or whatever, and the money just sits there. And after a period of time, the banks are required to send the money to the Department of State Lands. And likewise, brokers have to do the same kinds of things. But you can go online to the or call them. You can go online at www.oregonstateland.us, or you can call them at 503-986-5293, and you can run a check on your name, and you can see if there's any money owed to you. Then there's a claim process that you have to go through, and takes a while, but it's not forever. And we've actually recovered some substantial money from people who had things that they just forgot about.
Well, and not just forgot about, as a person ages, sometimes they, you know, and they don't have as good of handle on their finances. Maybe the child is stepping in to help them with it, and they don't know about a particular account, and that account gets lost in the shuffle over the years, and, you know, it can be sizable. I knew of a situation where there was two CDs that got lost the track of, and they totaled over $100,000.
Wow.
And it was quite a day when those were recovered.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, because years ago I had a neighbor lady, and she was a really sweet lady, but she didn't have many relatives, and she asked me to be her personal representative, and I wasn't really keen on the idea, because I'd rather be her lawyer than her personal representative, but she wanted me to do that, so I did. And so when she passed away, I went through all of her stuff and did the things that personal representatives do. One of which was, I was searching her house for records and things like that, I found what amounted to a key that looked very much like a safe deposit box key. Well, all the records showed me where she banked, so I went down to the bank branch, and I had my little appointment letter from the court, and I was the PR, and I went to the manager, and I said, hey, I want to look in this box because, you know, I'm the PR. And he said, oh, well, that's not one of ours. We don't that. And I told him the name of my client, or the decedent, and he said, no, that's not ours. And I thought, well, you know, they could have changed banks or something, and I might not have known. So I went on with the probate of the estate, and about 3 months later, I got a bill in the mail for a safe deposit box at that bank, at that branch. And I grabbed my little old key, and I grabbed my little old, letters from the court, and I went down and I found that same manager. I said, "Hey, guy, you remember me?" He said, "Yeah." I says, "I got this bill that says I have a safe deposit box here. I want to look at it now." And so I did. And just like you said, in that box was $90,000 worth of savings bonds.
Wow.
And that would have gone to the Department of State Lands had it not been for, you know, the good fortune of finding the bill. I guess that was the best bill I ever got.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So anyway, and I know that the heirs and charities that were of the estate were much more thrilled with $90,000+ additional than they would have not been. So
for the job that you were doing. So yeah. I suppose it's like the movies. The bank goes in with a little drill and drills out their safe deposit box, and after X number of years of no activity, and
if it's just gone, they change the lock and, you know, rent it to somebody else.
Yeah.
Oh well, I was thinking, you know, it might be spy stuff or something, but it wasn't. It was just lots of money.
Yeah.
Passports,
guns,
weapons. Yeah. That would have been a surprise, wouldn't it?
That would have.
Wow. So anyway, that's kind of my comment today for things is just the when the state of Oregon gets your money in. And as a practical matter in estates, it really doesn't happen very often because, quite frankly, most people have somebody somewhere that's entitled to the money if they have no will, and ultimately it'll wind up there.
You know, it's kind of a fun thing to do to hop on the website that you gave and, you know, check out your name, see if there's anything on there. You know, I've known folks who are, you know, very on top of their financial situations and just on a whim hopped on there and, well, sure enough, here's a $75 refund check that I never claimed from my state tax refund back in, you know, 1992 or something like that. And just occasionally things happen.
Yeah. Well, folks, you are working your way towards the end of the hour, so if you would like to call in and join our conversation, ask a question, or just tell us what you think, telephone number is 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. However, I got a little signal from our engineer that there may be a caller right now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to ask a question. I have a question about the basis of a residence tax question.
Ooh, well, I will turn you over immediately to our tax expert. Thanks
Hello.
For calling.
Hello, Karen. How are you?
Thank you. Hi, I'm fine.
Good.
My question has to do, I was married for 20 years, and in the divorce, I received the house, the residence, but I have no idea what the basis is, and I am guessing that the basis was the current value assessed or estimated at the date of divorce, but I don't know for sure.
Well, in this situation, your basis is going to be the original basis going all the way back to when you guys purchased it and all the improvements that were made throughout the years, you know, until you received it, and then, of course, all the improvements you made after you received it. Now, yes, and so obviously, as you said, that's going to be difficult, but maybe it's a non-issue. Is this your principal residence now?
It is.
Okay.
But it is worth more. It's worth probably in the $500,000 range.
Okay, so you are pushing the exclusion of gain limit for a single taxpayer of $250,000 then?
Correct.
Okay.
That means I really have to do homework.
You do. Fortunately, there's a lot of information available with the county, even keeps records of when sales occurred. I mean, you can hop on portlandmaps.com, which is the local website here for Multnomah County, and type in your address and click on the right link for the assessor, and you can see some past sales histories, and it'll go back quite a ways and may indicate what the purchase price was back when you guys got into it. And that can be a good starting point. And, you know, if it's, well, I don't know how many years, but, you know, that could get you well on your way to getting up to the $250,000 a basis you need to, you know, not have to report any gain on this.
Good. Thank you very much for the answer.
Absolutely, Karen. Good. Thanks for calling.
And I enjoy your program immensely. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much. Well, that's a very interesting question, and wouldn't it be challenging to go back that way and have to figure out all of the improvements? So it might be a real challenge.
It is, and you know that's something we still struggle with is basis, and you know people think. Often, you know, with stocks and stuff, basis is required to be reported now. But, you know, if you've switched brokers throughout the past years or you know, especially if your parents or something maybe inherited some stock and then, bought some stock many years ago and then you inherited it from them. Well, of course, that would be a step up at that point. Maybe they gifted it to you. We still have basis issues. So
sure,
it's important to keep track of that.
Well, we have another call. Bill, good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help you?
Well, my mom passed away a couple of years ago, and my brothers and sisters, we were all adopted, received the distribution from my mom's will last year. And, I guess none of us received more than about $50,000. And then also my mom's brother, who she made a beneficiary, gave me about, as a gift, about $20,000 that she had given him because he didn't want it. So anyway, that was nice of him, and I just turned around and bought my wife a car. But anyway, my question was, how much, her personal representative, her and her lawyer, made the distribution of the will, sent us the checks and that kind of stuff, and at the same time sent along forms that had to do with what portion of this was going to be taxable. But my understanding was that until you received about $1 million from an estate, that it wasn't an inheritance wasn't taxable. Well, we've already filed taxes for the year, and none of this has even been a part of that process. But I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop and wondering, will I end up having to pay taxes on?
Well, you're almost totally right. Basically, if the estate was under $1 million, then there is no inheritance tax. However,
okay.
If some of the asset, if the estate made money during the course of the probate and the income was passed on to you, then you might have some income tax on that portion of it. But that would generally be relatively small. And then the other part would be, and more often than not, there's so little of income on most estates, especially of a state that a size, there generally wouldn't be a taxable event, but it might be. And then the other thing would be if some of the assets, but this wouldn't really usually come from a probate, would be if some of the assets were things like annuities or IRAs or something like that. But those usually come directly to you, you know, from this company, and they would send you a statement that says how much is taxable and how much isn't. So if you haven't gotten anything like that, the likelihood is you won't be facing any tax stuff, you know, certainly no inheritance tax.
Okay, and can I have just one little other question, real quick?
Sure. We just got a third caller, so if you can go, I'll be glad to listen.
Okay. My mother also gave 25% of her money to the Salvation Army, and there was sort of a rumor from the personal representative that, or actually just from paperwork, where I read that. Because Salvation Army didn't pay taxes on that, that the other beneficiaries would be liable for the taxes that would normally be paid by the Salvation Army, in that they were a nonprofit.
No, okay. Problem with that. The Salvation Army gets it tax free, and they keep you tax free from their share of it.
That's okay. Right. And typically, you're going to be getting they may not even have had to have filed an estate income tax return. But if they did, expenses very often exceed income, and it's actually, you could get a Form K-1 that actually gives you deductions to put on your tax return that are in excess of the income. So if it's a small estate, you're typically not going to have to worry about much in terms of income tax unless it's a really specific asset.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your help.
You
Great
bet.
Deal.
Well, thanks for listening and calling. Well, say, we now have a third caller on the line. Gene, can I... What can I do for you?
Hello?
Yes, Jean.
Yes. I wanted to ask you two questions real quickly. When you have bank accounts and you put them in pay on death or interest transfer on death?
Yes.
Excuse me. That doesn't go through probate, does it?
That's correct. If it's a transfer on death, that creates a contractual relationship between you and the bank, and the, when you die, the bank sends the money to whoever's supposed to get it. Likewise, if you have it in trust, then your trustee then assumes title of that bank account and is able to distribute that however the trust says you're supposed to.
But if it's in trust, it goes through probate?
No.
Okay.
If it's an asset that's
in trust...
It's the
same as the other.
Yeah. So both of those avoid the probate.
Pardon?
Both of those avoid the probate.
Avoid the probate.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is this one under 1 million... There is no inheritance tax. Is that for the state of Oregon? Is it $5 million for federal?
It is. It's 5.34 now. 5.25 or 34. We're shaking our head. Yes, maybe. But it's 5 million plus a little bit for an individual. And if you happen to live in Washington, it's 2 million.
Okay.
So
thank
if you're,
you.
If you're
the
fortunate enough
is,
to be in there,
so you'd file two different things: one for the state and one for the.
Yes,
federal.
Although as a practical matter, well. Yeah, the Oregon inheritance tax return kind of, I think, almost requires a federal tax return anyway. So
yeah, right, they would.
It's a kind of an odd thing, but if you don't have to file an Oregon return, if you're under a million and you don't have to file an Oregon return, you don't have to file anybody's return.
Right, you don't have to find a federal either. Well, thank you so very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling, Gene.
Great program.
Thank you. Well, gee, that was really good. Well, folks out there, that's how this show is supposed to work. Give us a call and talk to us, and we're at 503-417-7626 and 800-990-0750. So,
good stuff.
Yeah,
glad
it's you know, that's what we like to do, because everybody has questions and concerns, and it's real easy to get confused about certain things. Well-intentioned people, you know, kind of, you know, mix things up a little bit sometimes, and sometimes even lawyers and CPAs mix it up a little bit, and it's always good to get a second set of eyes on it.
Well, the devil is in the details for sure, and you know, even at our firm, every tax return has two sets of eyes that looks at it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're making a big decision, or you know, there's a life change event, and there's you know, you've got there's just too much for one person to know. And so it's just good to just bounce things off of people. And, you know, I think we're Investing Simplified radio show. I mean, hey, we're your ace up your sleeve. Just give us a call if you've got a question, a thought, a concern. And hopefully somewhere in the mix of all of this, we can come up with some good information for you.
Yeah, and that information, of course, is not intended to be you know, specific legal or tax advice, but rather general information that sends you in the right direction to your tax preparer or to your lawyer to deal with it. Our information is you know, informational, because we can't possibly know all of your situation, and a lot of times little variances in facts or circumstances make a big difference as to what we're doing. We're talking about, you know, kind of the general rule is, and so we don't want you to, you know, go out there and say, wait a minute, the radio guy told me this, and then that we don't want to do. But hopefully this is helpful for you from the standpoint of knowing, you know, whether to pursue it further or whether to, you know, take some effort with your professional.
This is for entertainment purposes only.
Well, yeah, or educational purposes.
Oh, educate, okay.
Certainly. And anyway, so Kevin, what are some of the things that you were talking about before? You had some tips to offer us, or some insights?
You know, I think we're just, you know, we're getting down to the deadline. Make sure you get your extensions in. Make sure you know what that means. Give me a call if you don't, or if you have some concerns. You know, I my folks had some friends who, growing up, they every single year they would show up at the post office April 15th at 10 p.m. and sit in their car with all of their documents in a poorly lit, usually rainy night, and write out their tax returns on the dash of their car. And quite frequently, they said they would see the same people every year, and there was kind of a camaraderie. And you know, I don't recommend that, but you know, if that works for you, just make sure you get your stuff done on time. So you can reach me anytime, 503-666-5569. Our website is baker-colson.com, and we're located at 2414 Northeast Division out the east side of Gresham.
Well, looks like we've got a few minutes left, and I had one other topic that I wanted to just briefly mention, and that is a couple of tips on how to protect yourself from ID theft or from scams and elder abuse, that sort of thing. So I'm just going to kind of give you a list of a couple of things. First of all, you might consider, if you don't already, consider using direct deposit, because that way you avoid, you know, checks going anywhere where people can steal them. The other thing, you ought not to discuss your finances with a stranger. That's just kind of common sense. But a lot of people, you know, have a conversation in the grocery store, and the next thing you know, they're losing money on it. So keep your credit cards with your telephone numbers for making claims and reporting theft and stuff. Keep a list of those somewhere else other than with your wallet or your purse, because you need to have that stuff when, if something happens, you lose your wallet or your purse or get stolen or whatever, you need to be able to go and call those people, and it's better if you have the numbers and the numbers off the cards and all that stuff. Do not write your PIN number on your debit card or your credit card. Do not do that. Keep that somewhere else. So I hear that we have some music coming up, and this is Investing Simplified. You can reach me at 503-255-8795 or warrenallen.com on the web. And Kevin, where can they reach you?
We are at 503-666-5569.
Thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back next week with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management.